This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
I guess it is Tuesday, so that means it's my day to lead. Welcome in to Gwynn and Chris. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello, Matt Scraby. We're all here. The gang's all here. I am back from my short hiatus, taking my family on a mini hot vacation.
Oh, where'd you go? Palm Springs? Ah!
And I must be honest when I say this. My wife and I didn't really think about summer as we made these plans. And we happened to go the first day on the hottest day in the city's history.
Wow.
125.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm talking about plastic cups melting on top of each other. But we thugged it out, man. We had ourselves a good time for 4 days. Just myself, my wife, and kids.
Good.
And so it was a nice reset.
It didn't dawn on you that you found a hotel room really easily?
It did.
Like, there was no line to get hotel rooms, and every dinner reservation you made was, oh, yes, sir, we do have a table available at 6 o'clock and 7 and 8 if you'd like.
Clearly, it should have.
Yeah, it didn't register. Didn't register.
And, you know it is hot when, you know, the ACs in the car is just feeling good. All of a sudden, you got to, like, you keep finding yourself turning it further
higher
down,
and
colder.
Higher. Yeah, colder and colder. Right, exactly. Yeah, it's, you know, Palm Springs is crazy. I mean, to me, that's warm enough to where sometimes even the swimming pool isn't refreshing.
Oh,
even.
No.
You know what I mean?
They had a couple pools.
Yeah.
One of the pools was just hot, and it was like, I don't want to be in a hot pool.
Right.
I'm not trying to be in a spa right now.
Yeah, it's no good.
Were you in Palm Springs, or were you like in La Quinta area? Because my grandparents had a house in La Quinta.
I was in Palm Desert.
Okay, all right. Yeah, yes. Desert. You're literally in a desert.
Yes.
But I tried to golf one day in 120, and I...
And so, wait, so it, let me oh, tell yeah. you, there's, yeah, apparently yeah. there's a show that my wife and my daughter watch that takes place out in Palm Desert. And they made me drive them over to this area so she could take, you know, do her little Instagram thing. You know?
Oh, boy.
What show is this?
I got, you know what? I'm going to text my daughter right now, and I'll tell you when okay. she takes me back.
That's hilarious. I can imagine you being like, where am I going?
Yeah, exactly. You could imagine. But I was a trooper. I was like, yes, we're on vacation, so anything you guys want to do, I'm down. And so we drove over there, and she got out, took her little pictures, and then we moseyed on back to the pool, to the colder pool.
Again. Yeah, that's a tough assignment. We went to Palm Springs. I mean, I've been there a gazillion times. My grandparents lived there when I was a kid, so we would never go, obviously, in the month of July. But I did do a July trip to Palm Springs during the COVID season.
Oh, yeah.
Just because there was just, we had to get away, you know, and do something. And we actually did try to golf out there one day during the COVID, and it was ridiculously stupid.
I love how Chris always calls it the COVID, by the way.
Yeah, I don't even like to think back on it, but, you know, I do remember we did a Palm Springs trip just to get out of town for a few days, but. Yeah, that's tough. That you definitely survived. You get a lot of brownie points for this one, Tony. Should earn you a few.
I hope so. I hope that's get forgotten pretty quickly. But
yeah.
Nonetheless, it was a needed little break, and now get back to work and watching the pods. Who I watched every game. tell you, the first two were pretty freaking amazing. It was good, some good action there, although they lost the second one. I actually, if I'm being honest, I turned off the first one. I was like, oh, okay, we got this one.
So did I.
We got this one locked up. And then the next time I looked at my phone like 2 hours later, I was like, I was genuinely confused. I was like, 10-8, like, what? How did this? And then, you know, obviously I start to get back on my MLB app. Me and Trey start to read. We watch it, the condensed version, and we see how it unfolds. Manny, with his heroics at the end, get the Padres the first win of that series. And then they battled back in that second one, but looked like they just couldn't hang on. And then the third one kind of got away from it, looked like.
Yeah. A couple of things, you know, Tony. I think, first of all, you know, the win Friday night was just yet another thrilling win in what I think is becoming a really fun season. And yeah, we talked about that a little bit last week. I mean, this season's just getting fun. I mean, they're winning so many of these games. You know, one's more exciting than the next. I mean, you get the Profar walk-off game, followed a couple of days later by the, you know, Profar incident and the Manny home run and the Profar grand slam game, and you think that's one of the best games you've ever seen. And then Friday night happens, and, you know, of all things, Robert Suarez finally has a hiccup game, you know, which is to be, honestly, is to be expected.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to just expect a guy to, you know, retire the side in order every single time out the season. But the time he doesn't do it, Profar rescues him. I mean, Profar, I know Manny's going to be the one we'll all remember, but, you know, Profar tied it and had to tie it first. And, you know, he is having, I'm going to keep saying this because I believe it, I don't think he's the MVP of the National League. Don't get me wrong. If, you know, Tani's not going anywhere. But he's done so many MVP-type things, Tony. We've seen a lot of, you know, seasons where a guy just is magic and helps his team win. And Profar is doing it as much, if not more, than any player in baseball this year. So
yeah, he's definitely been the best Padre player, and it's really not close when you start to add up all those things you just mentioned, and you look at his overall numbers on the season. He's been the Padres' best player. Yet teams will still walk whoever's in front of them, whether it be Arise or whoever it may be, to face him, and he keeps coming through in those big spots. Yeah. And, it looks different sometimes. Sometimes his come through is a walk, an 8-9 pitch walk that gets things rolling or gets things started. He's been amazing, man. I don't know that there's a – I can think of a more recent deserving all-star and a starter who not a reserve, a guy who's going to start the all-star game. I don't know if I can think of one who's more deserving than him in recent years.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stories in the All-Star game this year. And every team probably thinks their guy is the best story. But guess what? Our guy is the best story. He just is. He's just the best story in the All-Star game this year. He's 31 years old. He's been toiling at this craft successfully and unsuccessfully for 12 years. And now it's just happened for him.
That's why he is the best story,
right?
Because he's no longer an up and coming guy like a Jackson Merrill who got into the All-Star game, or like a Ellie De La Cruz, these up and comers. He's a dude who, you know, was a top prospect at one time, kind of fell off of that, and, you know, was starting to you know, be one of those guys that bounces around from team to team. But, you know, whether it started here or not, because I think it seems like his fortune has started to change when he became a Padre. Even though he went to Colorado for that brief hiatus, he's just so much fun to watch and so much fun to root for.
Yeah, and I know it's on a lot of people's minds, so I'll bring it up and get your thoughts. But, I mean, what do you think they should do here between now and the end of the season with Profar? Because it just seems like it's a match made in heaven. Padres, Profar, Profar, Padres. But he's got to get some sort of contract for next season. And, I know that, you know, good business is – this is a tough one because the Padres have already committed so much money to so many other guys. And I know they want to keep Profar badly. And I'm sure he wants to come back badly. But
I'm sure he wants to come back. He says he loves it here. He said this place makes him feel like home.
Yeah.
That being said, the finances is still the finances. Nothing's changed since the season started.
Right.
And so, I mean, I think what I think should happen and what is likely to happen are two things. I think, of course, they should extend him and bring him back. He just, to me, he feels like a Padre. Not even just this year alone, just the previous years he's had and the success he's had in those years in a Padre uniform. It feels right. I don't know what the number is, but I think the reality is they'll probably have to ride this out to the end of the year and then address it at the end of the season if they can. Because, you know, based on what we've read, what we've heard, what we know, an extension depending on, I mean, how much more does this add to Profar having this season? Let's assume he gets through the whole season and he does a full season worth of what he's doing right now. Where does that put him?
Yeah. It puts him in really good company. It puts him in a high tax bracket is where it puts him. We don't have a tight tax bracket spot available.
You would think, but remember the year he came off of when he went into free agency. It was at the time, I think, a career year for him or one of his better seasons, and yet he had to settle for that Rockies deal that he got, which was a one-year deal. So maybe the market, and I hope this is not the case for Jarris, and I hope he gets the bag and is able to do whatever it is that he wants to do. He deserves it. But maybe the market will be of help to the Padres from that standpoint if and when that time comes at the end of the year.
Yeah, it'll be interesting, but his price tag is going to go way up when Rob Manfred is walking around with the microphone and the World Series trophy and going, Jarrickson,
if that is the case,
led the Padres to their first championship.
If he leads the Padres to a championship, it would be really hard to let him walk out the door at that point.
That
would be extremely hard.
Well, we can dream about it, and he's given us reason to dream. By the way, he's performed.
You thrilled our fans throughout the postseason with a great performance.
With a great performance. I want to just drop the entire conversation every time, but it takes too long because he's drunk. He's not drunk. I know. I titled Drunk Rob Manfred, so I never forget.
So funny. The other thing, speaking of dreaming, though, Tony, and going back to Saturday night's game a little bit, when they were down 7-4, and then they come up in the bottom of the 10th inning, and they go single, double, and the runs in, and the tying runs are on base, and then works out to where Higashioka comes up with the bases loaded at the end. I was honestly thinking he was probably going to hit a grand slam because that's just the way the season's been going. And, this is the one time he fly out because it's not easy to just get a walk-off on command like that.
No.
But the Padres have had so many of them that it wouldn't have surprised me if he would have done something dramatic there. And, unfortunately it didn't work out. And now they have a little losing streak to deal with. And they have a tough customer to deal with tonight because Logan Gilbert, don't be fooled out there by the record. He's 5-5. But in 18 starts this year, he's had 14 quality starts. That is one of the highest percentages in all of baseball. So he's almost guaranteed, based on that, to give Seattle 6-7 innings, 2 or 3 runs, which means Mazur and the Padres are going to have to counter. So
I'll read you a note from the Mariners' notes.
Okay.
It's just titled, The Friars.
All right.
It says, it just starts with has. It's referring to Logan Gilbert. Has made 2 starts in both of the last 2 seasons against the Padres. In each of the 4 starts, he has gone at least 5 innings and allowed 1 or less earned runs. Yeah. He set his career high with 12 strikeouts last year on August 8th against the Padres at T-Mobile. Padres hitters that have faced Gilbert previously are batting 146, 7-48 against him. 1 home run, 11 strikeouts. Now, that being said, the only reason why I brought this up is because I plan to use it today when I'm doing TV, on the TV side.
Okay.
This is a different offense, a different style offense than Logan has faced in the last, really, all 4 starts that he's made against the Padres. It's a different approach to hitting. And so I'm excited about the matchup today because I want to see, because Logan Gilbert has shoved against us the past four starts. It hasn't been a fun game to watch. I remember the one in Seattle. Didn't go well. That being said, I think this is a different offense, and I'm interested to see what kind of how much pressure they can put on Gilbert. Because when this offense is going the way we've seen it go, it's taxing.
Well, it'll be the challenge at hand tonight. I think it'll be a good game. I know everybody's already – we don't have to hype it, Tony. You don't have to hype any game between the Padres and the Mariners. The geographic rivalry takes care of that for us.
Come on, man.
Yeah, this is – it speaks for itself. USC, UCLA, Red Sox, Yankees, Mariners, Padres. Goes right there with all the rest of them. So the hype is there. It's real.
All right, let's get to break. When we return, Xander Bogaerts could be on his way back, and pretty shortly, we'll explain it on the other side. More Gwen and Chris.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/Odyssey Podcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. 2:21 is the time. Chris Ello here. Tony Gwynn Jr. there. He's at Petco Park tonight. Padres, Mariners. I know everybody calls it the Eddie Vedder Cup, but I can't get behind that. Nothing against Eddie Vedder. I just don't get the whole Mariner Padre rivalry.
I think
other than the
just
fact
makes
that
fun of
Chris,
it.
No one does.
All right, thank you.
You're not alone. None of us get it.
Like the players don't understand it, right? Everybody's like, "Oh, you're playing the Padres, so."
We almost had to pretend that it was real because we were left with it. This is the only thing we got.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'll give you the fact that they share a spring training complex,
right.
but to me, that's it.
That's as far as it goes, though.
They're both in the Pacific time zone, but that's...
So do the Rockies and the Diamondbacks. That doesn't make them rivals.
No.
Bitter rivals.
Bitter rivals, yes. Before we go too much further, shout out to Ashley out there, who was on the chat.
The YouTube chat.
If you're not watching the show and you'd like to, go to YouTube, search 97.3 The Fan, you can watch. But Ashley is a transplanted sports fan from Detroit.
She had to go back to Detroit.
Yeah, back to Detroit.
Oh, she had to go back to Detroit, transplanted from here to Detroit, and wants to catch up and keep up. So, Ashley, thank you for join us out here in San Diego. We miss you, but we'll give you all the Lions coverage we can once we get to that point.
Yeah, will we?
No.
Yes, because I like her head coach.
We love the kneecap cannibal around here. So,
all right.
Yes, we'll do our very best.
I don't know
best.
If you'll get consistent Detroit coverage, but, you know, every week they play. We'll talk about them at that point.
You know, welcome to Gwen and Chris. Before we get to anything else, the Lions taking on the Seahawks this week.
Didn't we have a team right a couple of years ago? Was it the Panthers or somebody?
I think tried to follow somebody. I did that a long time ago on another station in a galaxy far away. The Padres were having a really, really bad year. And I asked the fans if we should adopt a team and who to vote for. And they voted for the Rays. And we got their play-by-play guy on, and we made him kind of a regular guest, and we followed. And it was the year they went to the World Series against the Phillies.
Oh.
And everybody kind of got in on it. It was kind of interesting, actually.
It is kind of interesting.
Fortunately, we don't need to do that because our Padres are relevant enough on their own.
You know, I will say this one thing before we move on from Ashley's comment.
Yeah.
We don't normally talk about teams that lose double-digit point leads in the NFC Championship.
Oh,
so,
listen to
that
this
was, cold-blooded
strike.
Since you brought it up.
That was a cold-blooded strike.
I'm glad you brought it up. You know, I was thinking about this today. It came up. I was at the barbershop, and usually where these topics come up is at the barbershop.
It cracks me up that he goes
to
the barbershop,
but I get
honestly.
It.
But
I
that's
get
okay.
It.
That's another
it's
story.
It's more about community than anything.
Listen. My head has – it can't take too much of me shaving it without it inflaming with all kinds of hair bumps. So
gotcha.
I go to a professional
okay.
most of the time.
Fair enough.
So, I was thinking about this day, Scrape.
Uh-oh.
Brock Purdy.
Yes.
He's going to need to get paid here in, what, another year,
yep.
I think?
Mm-hmm.
What's to stop your head coach from thinking, huh, I drafted a quarterback at the last pick. Why can't I do it again?
There's nothing to stop him from doing that, and
you
I'm
know
very
what that
scared
means?
Of that.
That is where you get the, you know what, Brock, this is what we're going to offer you. And this is our final offer because we can go draft another quarterback. We did it with you. We turned you into a possible MVP candidate.
So
wow,
we're not going to
really,
offer you.
Really
so
you're selling me, Coach Shanahan. On
so you're selling me the 49ers should offer Brock Purdy like the minimum when it's his turn?
I'm just saying they should be able to shave corners a little bit. They got the leverage at this point.
Here's
I'm
what I know
saying.
About Kyle Shanahan, and Tony, you're not wrong. Kyle Shanahan did something like trade every single draft pick they had for Trey Lance and said he was the next coming of the best quarterback of all time.
He did.
And then he got rid of him faster than he could ever get rid of him for a six-round pick. So Kyle Shanahan will bury that knife in your back when he doesn't
I'm just
need
saying,
you
everybody got to get paid at some point. And we know once the quarterback gets paid,
team suffers.
Just, unless you are Tom Brady giving up boatloads of cash, the rest of the team is going to suffer.
Brock Purdy's a good guy, though. I think he would take veteran minimum for the rest of his life. For rest
yeah,
of his career.
We're about to find out how good of a guy Brock Purdy is
true,
at the end of this year,
true,
I promise you.
True.
I digress.
No, you didn't digress at all. We're always we may not be always open for Lions talk, but we are always open for 49er talk. All right, Xander Bogaerts, the latest. Doesn't sound like it's going to be too much longer before Xander is back. Scrappy, do you have an update for us?
Yes.
I got a little update.
Okay,
a little update,
go.
All right.
According to Kevin Acey, it appears Xander Bogaerts remains on track to return for the final series before the All-Star break.
Really? This weekend, then?
Yes, will likely face live pitching. Ironically, or maybe not, he got hurt against the Braves. That's who will be in town when he comes back this weekend. Now, he's supposed to face live pitching here at Petco Park and playing a game or two just up the street at Lake Elsinore. So, if all goes well, Friday will be his return day.
Well, you know, we should be happy about that. Shouldn't we? I mean, I only say it that way because I know there's a bunch of grumbling fans out there.
Well, here's the question on
you know,
Friday.
Blame everything that negative that's ever happened on the Padres on Xander Bogaerts, including, you know, the fact that the team had to, you know, move from Qualcomm Stadium somehow was his fault. You know.
Here's the question from Friday because he's coming back, as we said. Where does Donovan Solano go? Where does David Peralta go? Where does he fit in this lineup? Because you're not going to leave him on the bench. You're going to put him back in there. And Solano's hitting so well. Chris said Solano's the odd man out of everything.
He is.
So he's going to go back to being a bench piece, a pinch hitter, and
he's going to serve the role that basically Tyler Wade serves from the left right-handed side. You know, there's going to be because the tough part is they got a boatload. When I say a boatload, they got a boatload of infielders. And so Crone slides back to first, I assume. Arise now is your DH. You got Bogey at second. You got Kim at short. You got Manny. Now, Manny's going to need some days off his feet at third. What happens then? I think Arise probably gets some play on the infield. Left-handed pitching, they may give, you know, Crone a day off here and there. But there ain't going to be a lot of space. It's going to take, really, a DH spot, somebody at first getting a day off, or Manny getting a day off for Solano to be in the lineup.
I would also, you know, think it's not impossible for at this point, because he really hasn't had a light, you know, light up the night season, for Ha-Seong Kim to get a day off or two.
Oh, yeah.
And put Bogaerts at shortstop. Is that going to cause a problem since they had him move from short to second? Is he going to be, you know, is there going to be a seamless thing for him to go back to shortstop? Or would they put Jake at shortstop and rest Ha-Seong Kim?
They got options at short. I mean, Jake can play it. Bogey can play it.
Jackson Merrill can play it. Fernando Tatis Jr. can play it.
They got a boatload of options, if we're being honest. Speaking of which, I think the live inning is about to take place here shortly.
Oh, Xander.
Yeah, Xander's got the helmet on. He's got the bat on. I'm trying to figure out who's throwing. Somebody's getting loose down in the... They might have brought somebody.
Huh.
Some of the minor leagues.
So how does the live inning work, Tony, real quick?
They set the cage up, the shell, but they don't have it over. They kind of have it in the background to catch any balls that may get away. Most of the pitchers hate to have that L screen there if they're going to have live pitching, so doesn't look like they're going to have it right now. It's going to be live pitching. You're just not running. Everything is real. No umpires. No running.
That's where they should have all of us go down there and call balls and strikes
but
to
Xander,
see how hard it
but,
is.
But wait a second. But Xander's the batter for every spot in the lineup?
Yes.
Got it. Okay. So he gets to make three outs, basically?
I don't even. They probably will take it in at bats. So, you know, he'll have an at bat, take a break, have an at bat, take a. Because you got to remember the pitcher, you know, they can't have him out there just being a human pitching machine. He actually got to take his time. They got to treat it like as close to as simulated as possible.
There you go.
There you go.
The very latest. When we come back, we'll slip a Padre lineup in for you. And we'll talk about the rival Mariners a little bit more in depth. Ryan Divish, Seattle Times, stops by for a visit as Gwynn and Chris rolls on.
2:37 on the clock. Ryan Divish, Seattle Times, will join us shortly. Break down this Mariner team that at one point seemed to be running away with the American League West. That is no longer the case. The Houston Astros have, I wouldn't even say they've caught fire. They're two games above 500. And they've closed that at one point, I think it was a 10-game lead.
Yeah.
Down to two.
Mariners were 44-31, Tony, on June 18th. So that's less than a month ago. Since then, the Mariners have gone 5-12.
Yeah.
And that has opened the door for the Astros to get back in the running. And a lot of people think the Mariners are going to really be kicking themselves when it's all said and done because they had a chance to kind of put Houston away, right? But yeah, and they didn't quite do it. This is a team that last year was 88-74. They were 14 games over 500, not in the playoffs. The Arizona Diamondbacks were like four games over 500 and went to the World Series.
Right.
Like, that's not fair, but that's how it works out sometimes. So
the irony, though, is that Diamondbacks team did end up losing to the team that beat out the Mariners in that division.
Yeah,
in the Texas Rangers. But you're right. I think most people have seen the Mariners over the last 3 years, realize it's a very good team, but also realizes they haven't done anything to prove that you should believe them when they get into a lead. Because I don't know, even as they were 10 games up, anybody actually counted the Astros out. And here we are about to hit the break, and the Astros are two games behind, and they got a few more matchups. See, and, you know, this – I'm going to digress a little bit here. This is why I like the heavy-handed scheduling of your division versus we have now. The Padres don't play the Dodgers again at home all season. Their next time they play the Dodgers will be in September at L.A. Like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah, you're 7-8 games out. You don't have a chance for one of the series in the middle of the summer to, you know, make up a bunch of ground.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. The other team can put you away. But, yes, there's not enough intra-division games anymore because of this schedule. Agreed. But there are still plenty of games against the Mariners. So
there is indeed, which is a perfect segue into our guest. Ryan Divis, Seattle Times, joins us here on Gwen and Chris. Ryan, how's your day? How are you enjoying San Diego?
Oh, loving it. You know, back home in Seattle, it's 95, and they don't handle heat there well. They don't handle it well, and they don't handle excessive heat. A lot of places don't have air conditioning up there, so, you know, I'm enjoying my Marriott lifestyle in this nice 80-degree weather here in San Diego. Like, I don't know why anybody would want to leave this place.
Yeah, the Marriott lifestyle can be nice, especially when you got some AC that can control everything. I just experienced that a little bit myself. Ryan, I want to ask you a little bit about this ball club. About a month ago, this team looked like it could run and hide in the American League West. That has not been the case. This team has struggled a little bit. The lead they had that was once 10 dwindled down to 2. What has happened in that span of time with this Mariners ball club?
Yeah, they got hit in the face by a big slap of reality. They realized that if you average 3 runs a game, no matter how good your starting rotation is, it's not sustainable to keep winning baseball games at the big league level. I mean, their starting rotation has been outstanding all year. You know, I think they're first or second in quality starts. You know, they go out, they get you 6 almost every day. But, you know, when you struggle to score 4 runs in a game, and it's an ordeal to score 4 runs. And even in modern baseball where batting average is down and strikeouts are up and everybody's relying on the home runs, you got to find a way to get 4. And, I mean, for the Mariners, it's just difficult to do it at times.
Ryan, I want to talk about let's talk about Logan Gilbert first. He's pitching tonight, and he's had really good success against the Padres. You talked about quality starts. I think he's got 14 out of 18, so it's almost every time out. Yet he's only got 5 wins, which speaks to what you're saying about this offense. Does the offense simply – well, I asked about Logan Gilbert, so let's stay there. How good is this guy, and how good should he be if he was getting support?
Yeah, I mean, like, you look at it, there's, you know, in all those quality starts, I think there's 4 or 5 no decisions and, like, 3 losses where he gave up – 2 of the losses, he gave up 2 runs and they lost. He's been outstanding. So he was a guy that they drafted in the first round, and you look at him, and while I will, you know, as a former college catcher, I will say that no pitcher is athletic ever. He really doesn't look athletic in any way. Anyway, he's 6'7", kind of walks on his toes, you know. I mean, but he's got the longest arms I've ever seen. He's got the biggest hands I've ever seen. Like a baseball looks like a golf ball in his hands. And he's kind of what the modern pitcher is. And, like, you know, he's got the water ball, the med ball, the weighted bags, all that stuff that he does in between starts and warming up, like Paul Skeens. You know, he's gone to a pitching guru since he was 14 years old or 13 years old, like how to build all this stuff. And he's also a guy that, like, continues to, like, monitor all the data. So he understands spin rates, pitch shaping, all the tunneling aspects. And what he does is he'll just continue to add to his repertoire. When he first came up, he threw his 4-seam fastball 70% of the time. He had a slider, curveball, and changeup. Well, he no longer has a changeup. He's got a splitter. He's got 2-seamer, 4-seamer. He's got a cutter, slider, curveball. You know, he's got everything because he continues to add. Because, like, as he said, you got to keep adding. You got to keep adding to try and combat these hitters. So, you know, that's, he's kind of evolved, and that's what made him good. That's kind of, like, lifted him into the all-star status, is he continues to add pitches and refine his repertoire. So, like, he's not getting beat up by left-handed pitchers, or he's not getting beat up for homers. You know, he's found ways to adjust to what hitters are doing to him.
First of all, Ryan, you and I subscribe to the same thought in terms of pitchers and never being athletes. They will tell you.
They will tell
you differently. All of them will. But I want to pin you down on Logan a little bit because he is getting better. It seems like I've seen him the past. I've seen all his starts against the Padres. He's been dominant in all. But it seems like this year he has taken another step forward. He's an all-star this year. Is that in part because he keeps adding to his repertoire? Is it that simple?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's, you know, the splitter especially because he didn't have a changeup. So, you know, you get that splitter, which is, like, kind of the new pitch coming back. I think all the Mariners are doing it. So he adds the splitter, and it changes the eye level because it's on multiple planes. You know, it's got, I think it's at 84, so you're talking about the good velo difference, and you know it has a lot of movement, and you got to have that against lefties. I mean, the teams just load up with lefties against them. He didn't have a way to combat it. You know, change kind of the plane on a slider a little bit, all this stuff. They continue to evolve, and what it really does is he doesn't have patterns. You know, he's not predictable. You can go anywhere, anyway, and he's shown a willingness to throw any of them. Again, you know, like he's had starts this year where he's thrown his fastball 25% of the time. You know, 2 years ago, it was 75% of the time.
Yeah.
That's a big change in the mentality. You know, these guys go up, you know, pumping heaters by guys at the AA level and thinking that's what it takes, but that's what's going to make you good. And when you get there and you realize, oh, this doesn't happen. I mean, look at Chris Paddock. You guys remember that?
Yeah.
They catch up to the fastball. Good hitters will find a way to hit that fastball. So how do you combat it? And that's what he's done.
Ryan Divish, Seattle Times, is with us. Ryan, I want to ask about Julio Rodriguez. That's kind of where I was headed last question before I pulled myself back to where I wanted to be. 16 games, one home run, one RBI. That's unbelievable for a guy of his stature. He's got only 30 RBIs this season. He's only hitting .247. His on-base is under .300. I'm telling you things you already know. His OPS is a paltry 632. This is Julio Rodriguez. Now he gets a quad injury Saturday, gets a plate appearance Sunday. What's the latest with him, and what's been wrong with him?
Well, I expect him to play. I don't know if he'll start today, but I expect him to play in this series. The quad injury wasn't too serious that they thought anyways. It was more precautionary. And I think it's smart. He didn't try and push it and hurt himself. As far as the bat, I don't know if there's what, you know, it's been a lot of things. It's been approach. It's been swing changes that he made in the offseason that didn't manifest into success. And, you know, and it's all kind of just multiplied. So, like, this offseason, he changed up the load in his swing a little bit, used less legs. But it was really static looking. And, like, you know, like the idea of going back to get forward, or as you guys know, this guy has a statue would like to say, you need to get into a good athletic position and get a good pitch to hit. Julio was doing neither. He's the best athlete on the team, and he looked the least athletic in the box. And so they've been trying to get back to maybe what he was doing before, but, you know, it just hasn't synced up. And then part of the problem with that, too, is that they attacked him like he attacked all right-handed power hitters, pound them inside with fastballs and sinkers, and then go soft away, soft away, soft away until they chase. And he would chase because he's a guy that put up numbers, you know, his first 2 years. And when you aren't putting up numbers and you don't understand why, you just keep swinging and swinging more, and you're playing right into their hands. So he's kind of gotten better with his approach at times. Sometimes the moment gets a little big for him. You know, he's 23 still, but he'll still get a little swing happy. They brought in the Mariners basically called his personal hitting coach that he works with in the off season, a guy out of Tampa, flew him in for this last homestand. It was 9 days. They were out there every day because the hitting coach was like, well, we need something, you know, something's got to get better. So they brought him in and it looked better. He hit a homer, had a double, and then he got hurt. But he's really just been kind of late with his timing, late on the fastball. And then when you're late on the fastball and you're just not hitting good fastballs and you're missing them, puts you in a bad position for breaking pitches. So if he plays, that's something you want to watch, is just kind of see where his timing's like. If he, you know, what they're trying to just impart on him is that it's okay to get started early. Get started early and get your front foot down and get in a position to hit the ball. because before it was like everything was trying to go at the same time, and he was all over the place. So we'll see if it happens. But I know this much: if he doesn't get going, he doesn't kind of, you know, he's not going to get his normal numbers. But if he doesn't start being more productive, the team won't go anywhere because they're a bad offensive team as it is, and when he's not going, they're a horrible offensive team.
It's every player's kryptonite, trying to get more after, I mean, two really good seasons. Went to swing change, and it seems like it hasn't caught. Ryan, I got to ask, first of all, I've been pretty impressed with your breakdown of a lot of these dudes,
kidding,
man. You're on it.
Yeah.
I got to ask you, I mean, this offense has never been like a juggernaut by any stretch, but they had pockets where they could put up runs. I mean, you start going through the numbers, it seems like everybody is having a down year offensively. I mean, what has been the conversation around the offense as a whole? I know you mentioned they haven't been able to score runs, but they were pretty content with this group coming in. Why have they performed so poorly offensively?
I mean, like, they strike out at just an alarming rate. Mm.
Back to that again.
32%, I think, the time. And, you know, and really a lot of the strikeouts aren't even about the swings on strike three. They're missing a lot of fastballs in the zone early, you know, fouling them off, not doing damage. But, you know, they went out and they had some payroll issues, you know, similar to the Padres. You got to maneuver some stuff. So they made some trades, moved some money around. They go out and add Mitch Garver on a free agent sign, and then they trade for Mitch Haniger to come back, and he'd had success in Seattle. And they trade for Jorge Polanco, who's a former All-Star, who's always kind of put up numbers if he's healthy. None of those guys have been any good. I mean, like, you look at the Mariners' offense, they only have one player with an OPS over 750. It's Luke Rayleigh. The rest of them are all below. Ty France has struggled, got hurt, struggled. Julio struggled. J.P. Crawford, after a year where he hit 270, had about a 390, 400 on-base percentage, struggling, you know. They've had the collective struggles of this team have been just unreal. You know, they've already fired Brant Brown, who they hired to be kind of their offensive coordinator, hitting coach. I mean, like, everybody wants the other hitting coaches fired, but I think it's just kind of amassed on them. Guys are struggled at the same time, and everybody's trying to figure it out. And a lot of them have just tried to hit their way out of it. And I think sometimes when you in MLB, when you want to get more hits, you need to swing less. And they haven't really proven they can do that yet. And so until they do, I mean, like, everybody's talking about the trade deadline and they need to add bats. You can go add Luis Robert. But if these other guys don't hit, it'll just be Luis Robert hitting and nobody else. Because, like, really right now, you look at it, Cal Raleigh has been really good late in games and hit some homers. But, you know, .210 batting average and strike it out at 35%. So they just don't have any sort of consistency in terms of
2:37 on the clock. Brian Divish, Seattle Times, will join us shortly. Break down this Mariner team that at one point seemed to be running away with the American League West. That is no longer the case. The Houston Astros have, I wouldn't even say they've caught fire. They're two games above .500, and they've closed that at one point, I think it was a 10-game lead.
Yeah.
Down to two.
Mariners were 44-31, Tony, on June 18th. So that's less than a month ago. Since then, the Mariners have gone 5-12.
Yeah.
And that has opened the door for the Astros to get back in the running. And a lot of people think the Mariners are going to really be kicking themselves when it's all said and done, because they had a chance to kind of put Houston away. Right? But yeah, and they didn't quite do it. This is a team that last year was 88-74. They were 14 games over .500, not in the playoffs. The Arizona Diamondbacks were like four games over .500 and went to the World Series.
Right.
Like, that's not fair, but that's how it works out sometimes. So
the irony, though, is that Diamondbacks team did end up losing to the team that beat out the Mariners in that division.
Yep.
In the Texas Rangers. But you're right. I think most people have seen the Mariners over the last 3 years, realize it's a very good team, but also realizes they haven't done anything to prove that you should believe them when they get into a lead. Because I don't know, even as they were 10 games up, anybody actually counted the Astros out. And here we are about to hit the break, and the Astros are two games behind, and They got a few more matchups. See, and, you know, this. Sorry, I'm going to digress a little bit here. This is why I like the heavy-handed scheduling of your division versus what we have now. The Padres don't play the Dodgers again at home all season. Their next time they play the Dodgers will be in September at L.A. Like, that's crazy to me.
Yeah, you're 7-8 games out. You don't have a chance for one of the series in the middle of the summer to, you know, make up a bunch of ground.
Yeah.
Or vice versa. The other team can put you away. But, yes, there's not enough intra-division games anymore because of this schedule. Agreed. But there are still plenty of games against the Mariners. So
there is indeed, which is a perfect segue into our guest. Ryan Divis, Seattle Times, joins us here on Gwen and Chris. Ryan, how's your day? How are you enjoying San Diego?
Oh, loving it. You know, back home in Seattle, it's 95. And they don't handle heat there well. They don't handle it well, and they don't handle excessive heat. A lot of places don't have air conditioning up there. So, you know, I'm enjoying my Marriott lifestyle in this nice 80-degree weather here in San Diego. Like, I don't know why anybody would want me this way.
Yeah, the Marriott lifestyle can be nice, especially when you got some AC that can control everything. I just experienced that a little bit myself. Ryan, I want to ask you a little bit about this ball club. About a month ago, this team looked like it could run and hide in the American League West. That has not been the case. This team has struggled a little bit. The lead they had that was once 10 dwindled down to 2. What has happened in that span of time with this Mariners ball club?
Yeah, they got hit in the face by a big slap of reality. They realized that if you average 3 runs a game, no matter how good your starting rotation is, it's not sustainable to keep winning baseball games at the big league level. I mean, their starting rotation's been outstanding all year. You know, I think they're first or second in quality starts. You know, they go out, they get you 6 almost every day. But, you know, when you struggle to score 4 runs in a game, and it's an ordeal to score 4 runs, and even in modern baseball where batting average is down and strikeouts are up and everybody's relying on the home runs, you got to find a way to get 4. I mean, for the Mariners, it's just difficult to do it at times.
Ryan, I want to talk about let's talk about Logan Gilbert first. He's pitching tonight, and he's had really good success against the Padres. You talked about quality starts. I think he's got 14 out of 18, so it's almost every time out. Yet he's only got 5 wins, which speaks to what you're saying about this offense. Does the offense simply – well, I asked about Logan Gilbert, so let's stay there. How good is this guy, and how good should he be if he was getting support?
Yeah, I mean, like, you look at it, there's, you know, in all those quality starts, I think there's 4 or 5 no decisions and, like, 3 losses where he gave – 2 of the losses, he gave up 2 runs, and they lost. He's been outstanding. So he was a guy that they drafted in the first round, and you look at him, and while I will – you know, as a former college catcher, I will say that no pitcher is athletic ever. He really doesn't look athletic in any way. Anyway, he's 6'7", kind of walks on his toes, you know. I mean, but he's got the longest arms I've ever seen. He's got the biggest hands I've ever seen. Like a baseball looks like a golf ball in his hands. And he's kind of what the modern pitcher is. And, like, you know, he's got the water ball, the med ball, the weighted bags, all that stuff that he does in between starts and warming up, like Paul Skeens. You know, he's gone to a pitching guru since he was 14 years old or 13 years old, like how to build all this stuff. And he's also a guy that, like, continues to, like, monitor all the data. So he understands spin rates, pitch shaping, all the tunneling aspects. And what he does is he'll just continue to add to his repertoire. When he first came up, he threw his 4-seam fastball 70% of the time. He had a slider, curveball, and changeup. Well, he no longer has a changeup. He's got a splitter. He's got a 2-seamer, 4-seamer. He's got a cutter, slider, curveball. You know, he's got everything because he continues to add. Because, like, as he said, you got to keep adding. You got to keep adding to try and combat these hitters. So, you know, that's, he's kind of evolved, and that's what made him good. That's kind of, like, lifted him into the all-star status. Is he continues to add pitches and refine his repertoire. So, like, he's not getting beat up by left-handed pitchers, or he's not getting beat up for homers. You know, he's found ways to adjust to what hitters are doing to him.
First of all, Ryan, you and I subscribe to the same thought in terms of pitchers and never being athletes. They will tell you.
They will tell
you differently. All of them will. But I want to pin you down on Logan a little bit because he is getting better. It seems like I've seen him the past. I've seen all his starts against the Padres. He's been dominant in all. But it seems like this year he has taken another step forward. He's an all-star this year. Is that in part because he keeps adding to his repertoire? Is it that simple?
Yeah, I mean, like, it's, you know, the splitter especially because he didn't have a changeup. So, you know, you get that splitter, which is like kind of the new pitch coming back. I think all the Mariners are doing it. So he adds the splitter, and it changes the eye level because it's on multiple planes. You know, it's got, I think it's at 84, so you're talking about the good velo difference, and, you know, it has a lot of movement, and you got to have that against lefties. I mean, the teams just load up with lefties against them. He didn't have a way to combat it. You know, change kind of the plane on a slider a little bit, all this stuff. They continue to evolve, and what it really does is he doesn't have patterns. You know, he's not predictable. You can go anywhere, anyway, and he's shown a willingness to throw any of them. Again, you know, like he's had starts this year where he's thrown his fastball 25% of the time. You know, 2 years ago, it was 75% of the time.
Yeah.
That's a big change in the mentality. You know, these guys go up, you know, pumping heaters by guys at the double-A level and thinking that's what it takes, but that's what's going to make you good. And when you get there and you realize, oh, this doesn't happen. I mean, look at Chris Paddock. You guys remember that?
Yeah.
They catch up to the fastball. Good hitters will find a way to hit that fastball. So how do you combat it? And that's what he's done.
Ryan Divish, Seattle Times, is with us. Ryan, I want to ask about Julio Rodriguez. That's kind of where I was headed last question before I pulled myself back to where I wanted to be. 16 games, one home run, one RBI. That's unbelievable for a guy of his stature. He's got only 30 RBIs this season. He's only hitting .247. His on-base is under .300. I'm telling you things you already know. His OPS is a paltry 632. This is Julio Rodriguez. Now he gets a quad injury Saturday, gets a plate appearance Sunday. What's the latest with him, and what's been wrong with him?
Well, I expect him to play. I don't know if he'll start today, but I expect him to play in this series. The quad injury wasn't too serious that they thought anyways. It was more precautionary. And I think it's smart he didn't try and push it and hurt himself. As far as the bat, I don't know if there's what, you know, it's been a lot of things. It's been approach. It's been swing changes that he made in the offseason that didn't manifest into success. And, you know, and it's all kind of just multiplied. So, like, this offseason, he changed up the load in his swing a little bit, used less legs. But it was really static looking. And, like, you know, like the idea of going back to get forward, or as you guys know, this guy that has a statue would like to say, you need to get into a good athletic position and get a good pitch to hit. Julio was doing neither. He's the best athlete on the team, and he looked the least athletic in the box. And so they've been trying to get back to maybe what he was doing before, but, you know, it just hasn't synced up. And then part of the problem with that too is that they attacked him like he attacked all right-handed power hitters, pound them inside with fastballs and sinkers, and then go soft away until they chase. And he would chase because he's a guy that put up numbers, you know, his first 2 years. And when you aren't putting up numbers and you don't understand why, you just keep swinging and swinging more, and you're playing right into their hands. So he's kind of gotten better with his approach at times. Sometimes the moment gets a little big for him. You know, he's 23 still, but he'll still get a little swing happy. They brought in the Mariners basically called his personal hitting coach that he works with in the off season, a guy out of Tampa, flew him in for this last homestand. It was 9 days. They were out there every day because the hitting coach was like, well, we need something. You know, something's got to get better. So they brought him in, and it looked better. He hit a homer, had a double, and then he got hurt. But he's really just been kind of late with his timing, late on the fastball. And then when you're late on the fastball and you're just not hitting good fastballs and you're missing them, puts you in a bad position for breaking pitches. So if he plays, that's something you want to watch, is just kind of see where his timing's like. If he, you know, what they're trying to just impart on him is that it's okay to get started early. Get started early and get your front foot down and get in a position to hit the ball. because before it was like everything was trying to go at the same time, and he was all over the place. So we'll see if it happens. But I know this much: if he doesn't get going, and he doesn't kind of, you know, he's not going to get his normal numbers. But if he doesn't start being more productive, the team won't go anywhere because they're a bad offensive team as it is, and when he's not going, they're a horrible offensive team.
It's every player's kryptonite, trying to get more after, I mean, two really good seasons. Went to swing change, and it seems like it hasn't caught. Ryan, I got to ask, first of all, I've been pretty impressed with your breakdown of a lot of these
dudes, man.
You're on it. Yeah. I got to ask you, I mean, this offense has never been like a juggernaut by any stretch, but they had pockets where they could put up runs. I mean, you start going through the numbers, it seems like everybody is having a down year offensively. I mean, what has been the conversation around the offense as a whole? I know you mentioned they haven't been able to score runs, but they were pretty content with this group coming in. Why have they performed so poorly offensively?
I mean, like, they strike out at just an alarming rate. Mm.
Back to that again.
32%, I think, the time. And, you know, and really a lot of the strikeouts aren't even about the swings on strike three. They're missing a lot of fastballs in the zone early, you know, fouling them off, not doing damage. But, you know, they went out and they had some payroll issues, you know, similar to the Padres. You got to maneuver some stuff. So they made some trades, moved some money around. They go out and add Mitch Garver on a free agent sign, and then they trade for Mitch Haniger to come back, and he'd had success in Seattle. And they trade for Jorge Polanco, who's former All-Star, who's always kind of put up numbers if he's healthy. None of those guys have been any good. I mean, like, you look at the Mariners' offense, they only have one player with an OPS over 750. It's Luke Rayleigh. The rest of them are all below. Ty France has struggled, got hurt, struggled. Julio struggled. J.P. Crawford, after a year where he hit 270, had about a 390, 400 on-base percentage, struggling, you know. They've had the collective struggles of this team have been just unreal. You know, they've already fired Brant Brown, who they hired to be kind of their offensive coordinator, hitting coach. I mean, like, everybody wants the other hitting coaches fired, but I think it's just kind of amassed on them. Guys are struggled at the same time, and everybody's trying to figure it out. And a lot of them have just tried to hit their way out of it. And I think sometimes when you in MLB, when you want to get more hits, you need to swing less. And they haven't really proven they can do that yet. And so until they do, I mean, like, everybody's talking about the trade deadline and they need to add bats. You can go add Luis Robert. But if these other guys don't hit, it'll just be Luis Robert hitting and nobody else. Because, like, really right now, you look at it, Cal Raleigh has been really good late in games and hit some homers, but, you know, 210 batting average and strike out at 35%. So they don't. They just don't have any sort of consistency in terms of results. Like, it's a struggle for them to put two hits or three hits in an inning together.
Sorry to hear that, and hopefully it won't pick up until you guys leave town. But Ryan Divich, Seattle Times, great stuff. I got another minute left, Ryan. If you can sneak in the trade that took place a couple years ago around these parts that sent Austin Nola here and Munoz and France and others there, has never really been looked upon too happily here. How about in Seattle? I know you said Ty was struggling a bit. He's our Aztec guy. Munoz is the closer, 14 saves. I'm assuming they still feel that was a success.
Oh, yeah. I mean, because, like, everybody kind of knew that Austin, there was a shelf life and how successful he could be because he got beat up so much and he was older. And I think Munoz has just been outstanding. You know, they locked him up to a long-term deal. And really, if you look at it, had he not strained his back a little bit in the game in Oakland covering home, he would probably be an All-Star. And he still could be. I mean, but, you know, he's just dominant when he gets in there. He's got the slider, added a two-seamer at 99 miles an hour, and just a good guy. So, you know, even if they just get Andrés Munoz out of that deal, they'll keep him. He'll be pretty happy out of that trade, you know, if Ty France is gone. And then you got to remember, too, there was that other trade for a player to be named later named Matt Brash, who's had TJ this year,
right.
But, you know, Taylor Williams for Matt Brash, and you get, you know, Brash had Tommy John this year, but last year, you know, he was striking out batters at a 40% rate, and he'll be back in a year and back throwing 100 and with a nasty slider. So they did okay in those deals. I mean, they've had some other trades that haven't been good, but those ones have worked out okay.
Yeah, losing Munoz hurt my soul for sure. You saw that one coming when that one was happening. Ryan, man, great work, man. Appreciate you coming on, spending some time. I'm sure I'll connect with you here today at the field, but appreciate you coming on today.
No problem. Take it easy, guys.
Good stuff, Ryan.
Ryan Divis, Seattle Times. Fantastic work there on Gwen and Chris. And,
I learned a lot in that segment, Tony.
Yeah, we did.
Usually I have to ask you stuff, but this time, you know, he covered for us. That was
he
good.
He covered everything.
He
good,
did.
Good work,
so
Ryan.
It's not just Padres fans that want to fire hitting coaches.
No, that's he hit the nail on that. Everybody wants their hitting coach
fired. Yeah, that's true. That's
maybe
true.
With the exception of, like, the Braves and Dodgers or something
Phillies
like that.
Or something, yeah.
Let's get to break. 3 o'clock hour on the way. More Gwen and Chris.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.